Once more onto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And in this half, this hour, you will hear Jake say...
Indubitably.
Ah, that's good.
I so figured I'd great. Just throw in one that I don't use very often.
And you'll hear Jeff say... That's very interesting.
Indubitably so.
Yeah, indubitably, indubitably.
I didn't allow them to have any suspense on how I was going to say it.
Maybe, you know, really? Like
pigs in space, I should have.
Pigs in space.
Yes.
So, for those of you who haven't heard us ramble on about this, gold has fallen, which it tends to do if
That's
you lift it up.
Gravity.
Because it's really kind of heavy.
It happens.
And, steel prices have fallen about as much as gold prices. Did you know that?
As a percentage or as a dollar amount?
As a percentage.
Okay, because if it was a dollar amount, they'd be almost free. But as a percentage.
Well, no, it's still pretty expensive out there. But it's interesting. Commodities across the board have fallen quite a lot recently. And gold fell with them, which... You might think, okay, well, gold is a... I don't know if you think this kind of thing or not. You might think gold is a commodity, copper is a commodity, steel is a commodity. So when they all fell at the same time, that makes perfectly good sense, right?
Except they're used for completely different things.
Well, theoretically, gold is supposed to be an offsetting something that
except
has its own life, except for the
just
fact that...
It's a commodity right now.
And it, interestingly enough, the purchases of those commodities by China... declined at about the same time the prices were coming down.
This goes right back to changing the way you measure things can change the thing you measure. In this case,
that was pretty fascinating.
They stopped buying something, so the price of the thing that they had been buying went down because it was going up because they were buying it.
Well, what happened was we had a classic corn hog environment here.
Oh, you're going to go into the corn hog cycle for us?
Well, I'm not going to go into corn hog cycle, but what happened was during the recession, people stopped building new plants, and basically there was a slowdown in construction and capacity to produce certain commodities. Coming out of the recession, China, among others, and India, as well as Russia to a lesser extent, had a very, very large expansion going. And they, particularly China, bought an awful lot of commodities. And part of the reason was that they were buying these was to keep the Chinese people who want to work fully employed. Because the concept of having 300 million people who are out of work in a society that doesn't have much of a social safety net is not something that the leaders in China wanted to contemplate. Because when you have 300 million people who are really, really angry and out of work, they might all decide to come to Beijing or something and do bad things. So they built a bunch of stuff artificially. In the process, they also had a lot of money flowing in, investment money flowing into China, because their economy kept growing when everybody else has stopped. It was purely governmental generated in a socialist economy, but that's beside the point. So they had money flowing in, so they had to buy something with it, gold. They also bought an awful lot of commodities with it. Now, as things turn around and there's less money flowing in, they're selling gold and not buying an awful lot of other things. And lo and behold, the price has started down. And somebody asked me last week, it's generally an indication when people see this and people who really have never done any personal investing that I know of, suddenly pop up and say, I want to convert everything I have into gold. And it wasn't out of fear. It was because gold is in a dip and it's a good time to buy gold because they got an email that told them that it was.
Right.
Well, I'll say the same thing that I've said before. Gold was at about $820 an ounce or thereabouts in the very early 1980s. It dropped about 80% before it found its bottom. I would not be surprised to see an 80% drop this time. Actually, that's an easy one. It's down something 25-30% now. it's really not that much further a fall to get it down to the same levels that we've seen before. Why are things not better? Why? There's an awful lot of whys out there, but we've just been through a major financial meltdown. A tremendous amount of money disappeared out of the economy. Inflation, by the way, according to the deflator index that's used for the GDP, don't you love that? That's the one that Fed right. pays most attention to. Inflation was about year over year, in other words, 12 months inflation, about 1.5% in the GDP deflator. That's below the target of the Federal Reserve, which means they will continue probably into the bond buying, or as the news media puts it, continue running the printing presses and pumping money into the economy. But I want you to pay attention to this. I know I've said it before, and I'm probably maybe even talked about it too much. I don't know. A lot of people were warning of massive runaway inflation. No.
We're not having that.
We are holding our own. The prices of some things are coming down still. The prices of a few things are going up. But the bottom line to it is we are seeing no sign of inflation in the economy. And when I say that, what we see that generates inflation is a wage increase followed by a price increase followed by a wage increase. Wages are not growing. So that's a big chunk of it.
Yeah.
Let me put the telephone numbers out, and I bet you got something you want to say about something. The telephone number's in here if you want to call and comment or discuss anything to do with all of this stuff we're talking about. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, and the numbers are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. I wanted to talk about Europe a little bit.
It's depressing.
It is depressing. That's part of the reason why I want to talk about it as a comparison to what we have here. They are working really hard to keep the European Union from collapsing, completely, totally collapsing. There are just a few countries in there that are having very, very anemic growth that makes our 2.5% first quarter look
great.
Very nice.
Yeah, I think Germany's up 1.7 for the same time period. We have a caller on 773-1400.
Let's take that first.
Okay, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Hello.
Caller. Hi. Jim Whitley from Moody.
Hello.
Hi.
Jim Whitley from Moody.
Have some serious questions.
Uh-oh.
We only take silly ones.
Right.
Our economy. And I wondered, we've already been downgraded once. At what point will another downgrade or two cause our interest on borrowing to double or triple as it's done in Greece and Spain and Portugal and Italy and so forth?
This is a good question, and it has an answer that's probably not what you expect. Because you looked like you were about to say something. I will hand this off to you just a moment.
Okay, well, I can give you as you said, what would cause it? If Congress got really, really stupid, which is kind of an oxymoron.
What do you mean got really, really stupid?
If Congress got even more stupid, and instead of taking us to the edge of the cliff and suddenly pulling back at the last second, they took us over the cliff.
By,
for instance, this summer when
the real cuts start.
Budgetary ceiling hits if Congress says, no, we will not allow the United States to borrow more money and pay its debts. Well,
that would be bad.
When we stopped paying people, when we have a contractual obligation to pay them, that would hurt our credit rating.
Yeah. Now, the credit rating itself
and
isn't the thing that would hurt us. That's in your life and my life, in the private world, or even in the corporate world, or even in some governmental worlds, when Standard & Poor's comes out and says we're going to lower your credit rating, it has a massive impact. They have to they have to be giving higher interest. They have to do a lot of things. There isn't anything to take the place of the United States debt right now. It is still considered the safest place. And if it is the standard at which other countries are rating their debt. France, for instance, only fairly recently had a downgrade. France and Germany. Germany hasn't had a downgrade. So why is it that Germany's debt has a higher interest rate than American debt? And the reason is because regardless of the credit rating, people know that Germany is far more likely to fail than the United States is. So that's an aspect of this. The credit rating on the United States is almost irrelevant. It is the underlying aspects, the earning power and the ability for those debts to be paid that's the problem. And if Congress does something really, really dumb, something else really, really dumb, I should say, they could really hurt us.
Well, let me – if you actually read – I did, which shows just what a geeky nerd I am.
You read, you did.
I read,
read
the actual S&P downgrade. And it's an interesting point. It's only for long-term treasuries – issued by the United States government, that means over 20 years. And the reason for the downgrade had nothing to do with our debt or our ability to pay the debt. It had to do with a very simple fact, and I hate to put it this way, it had to do with the fact that the Republican conservatives in the House of Representatives took us to the edge of not paying our debts.
And if they took us to a point of not paying the debts, then what would the debt be worth if it's not being paid?
Now,
that's the problem.
And what would happen is, I honestly think if in the House of Representatives, the Republican conservatives did that again this summer and then recessed and went home without passing something to ended and allow the government to borrow money, and as a result, contractors with whom the United States government has contracts didn't get paid. Doctors and nurses and hospitals don't get paid in the United States, and that happens, we will get a debt downgrade. However, we will also, at the midterm elections, probably have very few Republicans left in Congress.
Yeah. So let me lay some groundwork before I finish this up, the kind of lay a foundation for what I'm about to say. What the amount of money that the government has been spending for the past 6 or 7 years is unsustainable in a long-term fashion. There's no doubt about that. Alan Greenspan said it. Ben Bernanke said it. Anybody that looks at it says that is unsustainable. Absolutely true. Don't get me wrong in any way. We can't keep spending like that. If we cut good things as well as bad things, it's not good for us either. So sequestration is an across-the-board cut. Nobody's choosing what's the most effective way of cutting. That's a problem. But there's a statement that's out there that doesn't make any sense. So having understood...
Just one?
Well, there's a big one.
Okay.
The understanding that groundwork, where it's unsustainable, the spending that we've been doing, that we do need to cut back, but it's a matter of how. The revenue from taxes isn't enough to pay for what we're spending, period. That's easy, easy math. When the news media today reported that our debt to GDP ratio, or they said the debt to GDP ratio, and this cracked me up, was 105%. Well, you can't say a debt-to-GDP ratio and say 105% afterwards, because that's not a ratio, that's a percentage. Kind of made me smile. Other people are going, oh, Jake, you're such a nerd. But that number, no matter if it's a ratio or a percentage, is completely wrong.
Yeah.
If you compare it to Germany, again, a very healthy European, the most healthy of European countries, our debt-to-GDP ratio is far less than theirs. If we use the same math that they're using, we're not counting the debt to ourselves from ourselves. The U.S. government has IOUs to itself. It doesn't have to pay those. It could decide not to pay those. That's not real debt. It has to pay constitutionally. It has to pay the debt that's held by the public or by other countries. Yes. Okay. If we then look at the debt to GDP ratio, we find that it's between 65% and 70%, about 68%.
So you just said a ratio was a percent.
Right. I'm just trying to speak in the same media jargon. Yeah.
Right.
The reality is that we have a 68% debt to GDP.
It's about 1 to 1.5.
Right.
It's the ratio.
And that is very healthy in a governmental aspect. We're talking about, for instance, if you own a home and you have a mortgage on the home, say you make $100,000 a year and you have a $60,000 mortgage or a $68,000 mortgage, suddenly you say, well, that's not a very big mortgage. Well, that's what we're talking about here. The earning that's coming into the government, they could conceivably take the whole GDP. That would kind of crater the economy, but that's the idea behind it.
I don't know. They did it in Russia and China. It
worked. Yeah, I mean, just nationalize Venezuela. They just,
right,
which,
there you
good
go.
Stuff.
Right.
Cuba. There we go.
Is there time for just one more brief question?
Sure.
If the dollar loses its status as the world basic currency for trading oil and all these other things, and Russia and China have already developed some SDRs to replace the dollar in terms of the inter-country things, is that a greater risk to the standard of living in America if dollars are no longer of value worldwide like they have been?
That's like,
no?
But see, that's like saying if a minor planet smashed into the Earth. You know, if you start your question with a premise that is so unlikely that the likelihood is not measurable.
And we'll explain that in a second.
And the reason is Russia, for example, has defaulted on its currency in the recent past.
Not very long ago.
China does not allow its currency to leave the country because the only thing that backs China's currency
is the U.S. dollar.
Listen carefully. Is dollars,
now that
okay?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So the concept of the dollar, the only thing that would cause the dollar to lose its value as a world reserve, so I'm going to answer the rest of your question, would be the destruction of the United States, which would definitely have an effect on our standard of living.
Just to give a comparison, and you can look this up. Please don't take my word for it. The Russian GDP is roughly equivalent to the GDP of Dallas-Fort Worth.
Do you hear that?
You guys give us the best information I've been able to find, and I always feel confident after I talk to you.
Yeah. Well, the point is you go look up the numbers. I know that's what we do. We're geeks. That's what we get paid. I have spent the entire week, every 10, 12 hours
true.
A day.
Just discussing numbers,
just
looking at these numbers.
Doing pure research on investing, not doing any. I mean, I've done a very tiny little bit of actually work on client accounts. I've been doing pure, basic research all week, and my brain is mush.
This is the key thing. This is the thing that's missed in a lot of the scare tactics. The number of dollars out there and the value represented by the number of dollars. There is nothing that comes anywhere close. You can look this up at the Federal Reserve. You look at the M3, the M2, and the M1.
Right.
That's the money supply. If you look at that,
M1 is a tank, don't you kid me, or a rifle.
You can look at any or all of those, and you say, all right, this is the currency out there. What has the capability, the amount of buying power represented by those numbers to replace it? And there's absolutely nothing. The euro doesn't come anywhere close. We're talking about, the last time I looked, and I could be off, it was about 10%. Of the supply. Mm-hmm. You can't buy oil with 10% of the money that's being used to buy oil. That would do really weird things.
You can't.
So it is conceivable in the future to have another currency come and replace the dollar. The dollar replace the pound. Natural thing.
I've tried to figure out how.
It would have to be a long ways out there, though. If the dollar collapsed, so would the world. It wouldn't be the Russians replace it with something. The world would collapse.
Let me say that the Roman denarius.
Denarii.
That's plural.
Yes.
The Roman denarius, the coin.
Right.
The world ran, the Western civilized world, ran on that currency for about 1,000 years.
Uh-huh.
The dollar has at least as much value in the world today for the same reason.
Well, I have one little dispute. You said the civilized world, and I think you should have said the Western world, because there was pretty good civilization of the same caliber in China at the time. And
well, it just wasn't anywhere near as big as what the Roman Empire was at the time. I mean, yeah, there's lots of there was a civilization in India. But by the way, the civilization in China did not have a common currency.
No, it didn't. And this is another key part of the Roman currency.
Unless you count cows.
The Roman currency was not gold-based.
Right.
Silver-based. For the vast majority of that, it wasn't even bronze-based. They would put, we've got electrum, they would put gold plating on bronze. And that was the currency.
Finally,
that was,
they even
I would
stopped
say,
doing that.
Right. And this is actually where the world, where defacing currency comes from, because people would scrape off the gold plating and in process would scrape off the face of the coin. That's defacing the coin.
But
and so they were trying to get that gold out and sell it back. And the, there
Which
were,
was punishable by death,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, it was a death punishment. But the idea was that it was a the same type of currency that we use. It's just backed by the faith in the currency.
Let me give you a little perspective here. We do a lot of trade with China. We do a lot of trade with Europe, right?
Right.
Okay. And we do a lot of trade, but our main trading partners, by the way, are Canada and Mexico.
Yes.
A lot of people don't realize that. And Mexico is, by the way, getting a lot more healthy than it used to be, which is one of the reasons people are not coming across the borders fast. But here is a bottom line comparison that you can use. If we use the same figures to measure the national debt that we used in 1950. In other words, we used the same measurement. We say this is debt and this is not debt.
Right.
The debt in 1950 that the United States had on the books was four times what it is today. And
four times.
And the trading partners we had around the world were mostly devastated and couldn't afford to buy anything from us. Four times. In other words, the reason I say that, if you go look and you'll see that the debt following World War II on the charts of national debt as a percentage of gross domestic product and so on, it was actually bigger than it is today. But if you go and look what at that point was called national debt at that point meant there was a piece of paper in somebody's hands.
Uh-huh.
That said, the United States government will pay you this much money.
Right.
Okay? If we go to that same standard today, which is called the debt outstanding, it's like 67% of the GDP or something like that. And at that point, if you look at the total debt outstanding and the total debt outstanding today, by the way, even that number is different today. The way we measure that number is different today. So if we use the same system that was used back then, it would actually shrink that to about half of that 67%, or about 30-some percent. So they were at 150%. We were at 37%. I mean, at that time, they had 150% of the real GDP, and the GDP was going gangbusters at that point because we were gearing up, oddly enough, for the Korean War. So the GDP is growing like a weed at that point, and we had a debt equal to 150% of the GDP. Well, today, if we use exactly the same measures, we have about a quarter that amount of debt. Now, I'm not saying that that's necessarily a particularly good thing or bad thing. We can't allow our debt to continue to rise at the rate that it has risen during the recession. Nor could we allow going forward the debt to rise at the rate it rose from the 1930s and 40s. But we turned that train around very nicely as soon as we became aware of it. We paid off the debt. We experienced a phenomenal boom in the process.
So hyperinflation is not your primary concern, even though my cow feed for my 20% cubes is double what it was.
Oh yeah, well that's a commodity.
When I bought the heifers.
Oh yeah, well that is a lot to do with the fact that there's a drought across the Midwest.
Yeah,
that's more that is a big issue if you look at the.
That's not worldwide commodity trading
and
inflation that's causing that.
Well, there's two things that cause that. One is the fact we had a drought, and if you look at the GDP, you actually look at the numbers that came out on the GDP, agriculture. Output dropped. It's one of the few things in the economy. The government and agriculture dropped, and they dropped because of the drought, which means there's less corn. However, I also want to point out that due to the far-sighted decision by the Bush administration and Congress to mandate that a big chunk of the corn output goes into gasoline,
right?
That has a big chunk to do with the fact that the
The Bush administration; it was the Democrats as well.
I mean, in the House. But the Bush administration bragged about it. So I'm going to give them credit.
Well, you got to if you're blaming Congress now and Obama signs it, you got to blame evenly. So it works both ways.
It was a wonderful, stupid idea.
I have to make a correction.
Which should be repealed, by the way.
I need to make a correction. I said DFW had roughly the equivalent of Russia. And that is not correct. It has about 25%. Texas is roughly the equivalent of Russia.
Right.
And DFW is about 25% of Russia's GDP.
When Russia was in the pits after their currency collapsed, DFW had a bigger GDP than they did.
Yeah. So when if we were to talk about Texas coming up with a currency that would replace the dollar all over the country.
All over the world.
Well, you would just start with the country. The Texas, what would you call it? The Texan or whatever would somehow replace...
The Lone Star.
The Lone Star would somehow replace all of the dollars in the entire country. I think you could see that that's probably not going to happen because there's not enough wealth in Texas. It being a wealthy state, there's not enough wealth here to spread it around enough to replace all the wealth that's being represented by dollars in the country.
Then if
Russia is the same as Texas and they say we're going to do that for the whole world, you can see it's even a bigger stretch.
Gentlemen, I don't want to take anyone else's time, but I appreciate so much you answering some questions that have been bothering my mind after reading a couple of negative articles about the United States losing its world currency standing.
If you will very carefully look at who wrote the articles and who published them, in most cases you will find out that whoever that is makes a great deal of money selling gold to people who don't know what they're getting.
And deep down, this is interesting and something that the British discovered. Not being the world currency might be really good.
Not likely to happen, though.
It's not likely to happen, but if you look at the British currency, it used to be the world currency. It was the thing that ran the entire world. The British pound was accepted in Asia, in North America, in South America, in Africa.
Right.
It was accepted the way the dollar is now. It's a factor of the amount of wealth that is backing the currency.
Yeah.
And this is where the people really lose sight, because they think that just because we have a currency that's backed by faith, that it's not also backed by wealth. The American economy is by far the most powerful in the world and represents, if you look at energy production and use, if you look at all the things that people talk about, greenhouse, all that stuff. If you look at global warming and they point at America as being the number one culprit, and it's because we represent that percentage of wealth. We're talking about a massive proportion for a very small group, and that's why the dollar is the world currency.
I just had a thought that I kind of shoveled to the back of my mind, but there is a chance that what you just said might happen, and it would, by the way, throw the world into a massive depression followed by probably an equally massive war. There's something that Congress could do to cause that other than not pay the debts. All they have to do is take over the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, that would do it.
If Congress were to take over the Federal Reserve, as Rand Paul insists we should do momentarily, then the independent governors of the Federal Reserve are the people who regulate the value of the U.S. currency. The world trusts them implicitly as much as they do not trust the Congress.
What, you're saying people don't trust politicians? What are you talking about?
And the fact that the Federal Reserve carefully controls the value of that currency around the world is absolutely astronomically important. There is no such body in any... The euro has no equivalent body to the Federal Reserve. There's a European Central Bank, but it's very limited in what it can do.
And your confidence in the Federal Reserve adding $85,000 million a month into the foreseeable future is not shaken by that activity?
Absolutely not. Matter of fact, I'd be terrified if they didn't do it.
May I address that? Okay, let me address that very quickly, because the idea of printing money is one, they're using the word adding money to the economy, they're talking about printing money, and those are slang terms The Federal Reserve is buying $85 billion worth of mortgage-backed securities every month.
Correct.
They're buying
them from people that already held them. They held them, and they probably bought them at their face value back in 2007, 2008. They've not been selling them. The Federal Reserve is buying them from the holders of these bonds at a massive discount. They're paying between 60% and 80% of the face value of the bond. How is that adding money to the economy? Go ahead.
They could make a profit, and where does the money go then out of interest they get?
Well, it's kind of like when Paul Volcker was in the Federal Reserve and interest rates, he raised interest rates. You're familiar with that,
Resolution
right?
Trust Corporation made a massive amount of profit.
But, you know, what happened is when we had that inflation, there was too much money in the economy, way too much money in the economy. And Paul Volcker basically siphoned it out and caused a major recession and
charging the banks lots and lots of interest.
Jimmy Carter was the guy who nominated him and supported him, even
probably
though
he didn't get reelected.
And he didn't get any. I listened to Jimmy Carter talk one time, and he explained he did not. He knew when he nominated Volcker that it was A, good for the economy, and B, an almost surefire deal to keep him from being reelected.
And Alan Greenspan is probably the reason why George H.W. Bush was not reelected.
But this is the point. They pulled a phenomenal quantity of money out of the economy, but it stays on their books. They don't
have to hold it.
Burn it. So now when we had, there's different numbers, $14 to $16 trillion suddenly vanished from our economy. We should have gone into a massive, that was a classic, we're going to have a depression and a world war.
Talking about a decade, and the world is going to have a war to bring us out of it.
And in this case, the Federal Reserve has begun to take that money and put it back into the system. It is as if you had a massive trauma and you lost a tremendous amount of blood.
But someone was able to bring blood that had been collected from you in the past.
And so what happens is there's a little drip. $85 billion may sound like a lot of money.
It's a very tiny amount.
But in an economy that's generating roughly $15 trillion a year, it amounts to a slow drip to keep you from becoming dehydrated and dying.
Now, if Paul Volcker had done exactly what Ben Bernanke is doing now, back when we had inflation, our inflation rate would have gone, if we thought it was high then, it would have been astronomical. It would have been impossible.
So his predecessors did do exactly that.
So comparing the two times is not effective. It doesn't fit the situation. We have cycles that are going through, and if you think about if somebody is riding a bike and you give them a good shove forward and they're going uphill, that gives them a little bit of force to get over the top of the rise. If you apply the same amount of force when they're heading downhill, you can cause them to rapidly accelerate and fall off their bike. You have to look at the slope of the hill, not just the push of acceleration.
Hyperinflation is just not a factor here.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Okay.
Right. Bye-bye.
All right. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with
Jeff and Jake McClure. You looked like you were about to do that, so I had to say our names. Were you proud that I said our names?
You did that really well. You've learned my name. I'm impressed, and I know your name too. So we know something.
Done.
We can't say we know nothing. We're going to break for commercials, and this is the Personal Wealth Coach. Oh, do we take the call or do we go to commercials?
Let's go to commercials and then take the call. So
okay, caller, you're going to have to wait for just a little bit. We'll be back on the other side of these commercials with the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake McClure.
Notice you put your hat on as soon as the show started up again, or the program started up again.
Is that
significant? Because your brain was cooling off.
The air conditioning was on my bald pate.
So you were concerned about suddenly
losing
brain
heat.
Chill?
Yes.
Well, we have a caller on 773-1400. You are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Jeff, this is Wayne and Nancy. So I'm going to ask a question and then hang up and listen to your answer. In the last segment, you made a comment about Congress making a decision to not borrow more money and not pay back the debt. Do those have to be linked together? Can someone make the decision to not borrow more money but yet still pay back the debt that they owe? Again, I'm going to hang up and listen to your answer.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah, I think absolutely. That's what the sequester is. The debt ceiling has gone up. We are actually paying the debts, and we have cut the spending.
But he was asking, can we pay off our debts, pay the debt, make regular payments on our debts without borrowing more money? And the answer is no.
Well, that's not necessarily true.
Congress could do that. All Congress would have to do is in one of their omnibus spending bills or something, cut spending enough that we could pay everything we owe. It's that simple. Now, a lot of what we do, you know, for better or worse, for richer or poorer or whatever, right now the income, the tax income coming into the federal government is significantly less every year than the amount that comes out, and the way the budgetary, the spending bill has to come out of the House of Representatives, has to come out of the House Budget Committee, which is, by the way, our congressman sits on that committee, and it has to originate there.
But you started a statement, the simple statement and a good one, the amount of money that we take as tax revenue is significantly less than what we spend.
Right, and Congress could at any point pass a series of bills and say, we're only going to spend as much, you know, because the Secretary of the Treasury says here's how much he has to give this to Congress, and Congress accepts it. We anticipate in the next year, given the current tax environment and everything else, here's how much money we'll take in. Congress then, House of Representatives starts in the House of Representatives, House Ways and Means Committee, and the House committees get together, the Budget Committee, and they say, okay, how much are we taking in? And then they sit down and write their spending bills. And their spending bills always come out to a whole bunch more than we're taking, including Representative Ryan's bill. Don't misunderstand me here. They all say we're going to spend a lot more than we're going to take in. Well, how do you make up the difference? If let's just say you have an economy where you're spending $120,000, but your net income is $100,000, can you spend $120,000 with an income of $100,000 without borrowing money?
See, well, that's not what the question was. The question was, can we pay off the debts and just not increase the spending? And
he said not borrow money to pay off the debts.
Right. The only way we can do that is to cut the other areas.
Right.
And that's not happening. This is important and something that people fail to realize often. The Constitution says that we must pay interest and maturity on the bonds of the United States. Mm-hmm. So those actual debt vehicles we have to pay. It's a constitutional statement. It's not something that Congress can change easily. They can easily change what we spend on other things. If we get to a point where we hit the fiscal cliff or whatever, we're still required to pay certain things. So that has to come first, and those certain things are interest on the bonds and the maturity value of the bond if it comes due. However, that's not all of our debts. We have debts to people who have been building roads that haven't been paid for it and so on, all the way down the list of things, contractors for every conceivable area, people that have long contracts with the Postal Service or with the military or whatever. Though any of these things where you're contractually obligated to work for something and you may not get paid, it's not a bond. So if we add up the things that we are contractually obligated to pay right now, we are obligated to pay more than we're taking in because Social Security and Medicare and all of that is part of our contractual obligation, made by the government.
But the Congress can change that. In other words,
they can.
You're right. If the Congress were to say, hey, you guys out there in Social Security, you're all going to get maybe 20% less in the future than you're getting today.
Or we're going to means test it. If you have a large portfolio, then you're going to take a percentage off of your Social Security.
I saw some studies on that. That won't get it done. Basically, you got to chop at least a fifth out of Social Security, which you can't do by means testing. Rich people just don't. There's just not enough rich people.
Yeah, there's not enough money in the rich area.
So if you let's say Social Security recipients, you're getting 20% less. Military retirees,
you're got to wait till full retirement age of Social Security, and you're getting less than what you expect.
Yeah, you'll go to age 62, and you won't have inflation adjustments.
Now people think after hearing us say this, they're like, "You guys don't like retirees." Like, no, we're asked a very simple question.
Yeah.
There's not enough money coming in to pay the bills. We have to. Someone has to make some tough decisions and say, where would you do this?
We just do it like Ron Paul. Ron Paul had the solution. Basically, stop Social Security, stop Medicare, bring the military home.
Yeah, except that would lead to a world war.
Hey.
And little pesky things like that.
Picky.
There is a solution. I just don't know what it is. There's probably lots of solutions.
It's still going to involve short-term borrowing money.
That is absolutely true. That we are going to, right now, we're obligated in too many ways to too many things to pay only some of that would mean that some of the people aren't getting paid when they were promised to be paid. And when I say contractual, what I mean is Congress made a law. And if that were in any other circumstance, a law would be the defining thing, but Congress can change the law. Well, the Congress made a law about Social Security. They made a law about Medicare. They made laws, lots of laws, about Medicaid. They've made laws about unemployment. They've got a lot of, and about welfare. These are contractual obligations that they can change. They can choose to change at any budget, but making a statement, no, we're just not going to increase the debt ceiling. Now, that doesn't make any sense at all. They've already agreed to pay all this stuff, and then they say, I'm not going to make more debt to do it. There has to be a concise plan that says we're going to pay some of these at a certain rate and some of these not at all, and some of these we're going to pay completely.
Yeah, there's lots of things that could be done. For example, just Congress could say, hey, municipal securities, henceforth, you will pay interest on municipal securities. You'll pay taxes on it. Guess what? The mortgage deduction is gone.
Yeah, there's a lot of things they could do.
There's a lot of things they could do. And if they did a series
nobody
of those
would like
things,
it.
You know, I mean, the mere fact that they switched Social Security from an archaic, inefficient method of measuring inflation to the chained method, which is more efficient, more accurate, caused a minor firestorm. It happened.
I was very thankful that they were able to push that through.
But what happened is we have legal obligations Congress can change to spend certain amounts of money, and Congress has already passed another spending bill early this year. They said, here's how much money you're supposed to spend, Secretary of the Treasury. If you don't spend that money, you're in violation of the law, and we will impeach you. Then, because that's historically what happened.
Yeah.
And then, but you need to spend a whole lot of money more money than we're going to take in taxes. And then when the debt ceiling comes up, which is May 19th, Congress, the House of Representatives specifically, is going to say, no, you can't borrow the money.
But you must spend the money.
Pay the bills that we have had you obligate us to pay.
Yeah, this is a key factor here. Congress makes the law, and the law states, the Constitution states, that the Treasury Secretary has to make sure that those bills get paid that Congress makes. And in the past, when the Treasury Secretary refuses to do so, for whatever reason, Congress is then required to impeach him.
Yep. President Nixon actually used sequestration to cut spending.
And it was part of the reason why.
And was threatened with impeachment. Right. And that's one of the reasons that he had to resign, is Congress was so angry at him for violating the will of Congress to spend more money than we were taking in.
So the concept here, again, we do have to cut spending. We may have to raise taxes. These are all things long, long term in order to balance the budget and stop bringing in lots and lots of debt. Right now, we're not in a danger situation, but if we don't do something now, we're going to get to a danger situation at some point in the future.
That was a long answer to a simple question, but it's one that I think is important to understand. I don't think anybody in Congress has the least notion that there's not a requirement to borrow money to fulfill the obligations that Congress has placed on the Secretary of the Treasury to spend. The brinksmanship of taking us to the edge of not paying our bills is so awful because it would result in an awful lot of people out of work and a lot of very, very angry people. And the calculus that's done in Congress is for instance, the Republicans say everybody will blame the Democrats. The Democrats are saying everybody will blame the Republicans. So far, they haven't taken it over the edge to find out who will get to blame. But we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Make it quick.
Yes, sir. Hey, how about going through line item by line item and cutting the wasteful spending that Congress approves every year?
Next week, we're going to have to come back with Wall Street Journal had a tool that basically listed all of the programs and the individual parts of the programs and had a tool where you could cut certain areas. And you start realizing about a third of the way into the tool that there's a lot of spending and there's going to be a lot of people for each of the dollars that you cut that say that that's not wasteful.
Yeah, you're going to think this is really strange, but the government doesn't do much wasteful spending. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage.
They spend a lot more than they should, but if you consider Social Security wasteful, then some people do, or Medicare, or military, or road construction, or, I mean, you can go down a list of a lot of things. The thing that people bring up often is foreign aid. And foreign aid is about 1% of 1% of our budget. It's a tiny amount.
I mean, absolutely, but if you line item 1% across the board,
Congress does. That's what they did in sequester is 1% across the board.
But let's look at every single time.
They have tried again and again and again
and again. And like I said, I will bring up that. I've got to find that Wall Street Journal tool and bring it back here so that the people like you who are looking at it, it's a much harder problem than just a...
In order to bring things into balance, in order to bring things...
My money, how about we go ahead and cut the things that we need to be cutting? I mean,
what do we need to cut? That's the question. Social Security, Medicare, or defense?
We are out of time. Thanks for the call. And we'll bring that tool in. But if you'd like to contact us off the air, you can call us locally at
947-1111.
Or you could reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-PLAN. That's 800-914-7526. You may email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can also go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, and listen to podcasts.
And you have been listening to The Personal Wealth Coach, Professional Wealth Managers. And until next week, this has been us, and you have been you, and we look forward to you hearing us again.
Fair, balanced. Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.